episode 25 of You Call That Radio's audio podcast. How are you all doing? Thank you for joining us once again. And you're in for a treat. We've got Mick Artistic, a Yorkshire veteran of music, art, poetry, comedy and film. Thanks to Captain Hot Knives for introducing me. There's something in the water down in Yorkshire, I'm telling you. But he's a very funny guy and gave us loads of good insight. We talked about his career in general, about how Iggy Pop said that his song Sweet Leaf of the North, which we finished the show on, was the best thing he'd heard in over a decade. We talk about finding confidence to put your art out there. We talk about writing a book before you die. And this is, I think, Mick's 69. And that's exactly what he did. Him and his mate wrote a book. So we'll talk about that. His art exhibition. His UK tour he's currently on. And his brilliant new album, which is called Pop, which is available on all platforms just now as well. And yeah, just a really nice conversation. Great guy. I hope you enjoy and learn. That's what it's all about. I was going to put a shout out to the gigs that are coming up over Christmas. We're doing some parties for our patrons, but we don't have any sponsors or adverts or funding on this show. So if you want to know about what's happening over the coming weeks, then just go to patreon.com/you call that radio. And if you think it's worth it, then stick in £3 a month if you can afford it, because the show only exists because of the generosity of the patrons. But I'm going to stop talking because that's starting to sound like an advert.
Then you have the media, not just the news media, let's include them all. The media are almost literally exploding with bullshit because they're located right at the crossroads of all the other bullshit.
As you call that, radio, TV, we are live. And a very special guest today. I'm absolutely buzzing about it. We're about to speak to Mick Artistic of Mick Artistic and the Ego Trip, which was a recommendation from one of our regulars, Captain Hot Knives, a fellow Yorkshire man. I've been absolutely loving going through Mick's extensive back catalogue. It's totally blown me away. There's not really any pigeonholes or any evidence of pigeons that I can use to fairly describe the art, but it's descriptive tales of death, comedy, beauty, joy, all the good stuff. Brian Ferry's greatest hits. And the new album, Pop, is out now. They're also on a UK tour, and there is currently in an art exhibition, so there's lots to talk about. So let's go live to Yorkshire just now. Hello, Mick Artistic. Thank you for calling You Call That Radio. How are you doing?
Hello, Mark McGee. I'm okay. I feel quiet. I feel like a little boy, but I'll be fine.
Well, I can hear you fine, mate. I can hear you fine. You're having a busy week. You're selling the paintings. You were even up in our nation's capital of Edinburgh the other weekend. How did that go?
We had about 12 people turned up because there was a bus strike on. The weather was awful, so we only say got about a dozen or so people there, but it was a lovely gig.
It was Storm Bertie.
Yeah,
man. It was lots of travel chaos, man. And I mean, like even Idols, who sold out the Hydro about 4 months ago, it looked only about 70% full. There was loads of people messaging me. I think I gave away about 10 tickets to Idols to our patrons, and I think they were about 60, 70 quid tickets. So yeah. I think everybody just shat it and just stayed in the house on Saturday.
Well, it was a inhospitable night, really.
Yeah.
And we played in a cold little bar, the wee red bar. It was very cold and I had my vest on, but I just kept running around and people sort of moved from side to side and just kept busy. We had a very positive... Kept warm, yeah.
I'm loving the new album, man. I was just looking through a few of your older albums as well, and I noticed a pattern of one-word album titles. I personally do a three-word. Every album I've ever released is three words. So I was just wondering, is that deliberate? Is there a meaning behind that?
I think it's just short and sweet, and you know, the short, sharp shock. And when we first started, I think our first album was called Shock and Awe. So that was three words. But then we kind of, the next one after that was, I think, Pulverizer.
Yeah.
And then they're all like, and the, you'll notice that the artwork is the same throughout the, there's about 15 albums and we've got virtually the same artwork. So people get confused. People say, have I got that album? Janice, have I got that album? Have we got this? And I'm going, I don't know, you know. So.
Yeah, I suppose that is, that may actually have reduced some of your sales over the years.
Oh, yeah,
where have they got that one?
No, that's it. I'm always having a constant fight with Johnny the guitarist because he comes up with good business ideas and I proceed to sabotage.
So, well, I suppose it could also go the opposite way as well. So sometimes people go, I've already got that album. Then after a while they're going, do you know what? All the albums look the same, so maybe I haven't. So maybe there's pros and cons to that. Maybe it evens out eventually and people end up buying the same album twice.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the thing about the albums, I do them all in Sharpie or in gel pen, and because I'm scared of rulers, I'm very, very bad at sort of, I don't do stuff like, I don't have a graphics app on my phone. So it's all very much using my eye. Just rule of eye, Sharpie. And for like 15, 20 years, I've just been sort of very, very kind of insecure about the qualities of the albums. And suddenly it turns out that we're in a coffee book. We're in one of these coffee table books now called Rock Logos or Logo Rhymes. And it's we're between the Rolling Stones and Bowie. And my Sharpie design... and there's like a little spiel about how wonderful and charming it is, and the fact that I don't go near a graphic designer, and it's just done in pen. And I'm there. I am. I've got like a double page center spread.
That's amazing. Also, a big claim, another claim to fame is, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that you, Iggy Pop, did he say that your song "Sweetly for the North" was his favourite song of the decade?
Yeah, he did it back in 2016. He was on this on NPR on the American radio.
Yeah,
and me and my mate were just sitting in the Leeds Art Gallery having a coffee, and we were just talking about this song, "Sweetly for the North," and how it kind of it was a good song for us business wise. And I went to the toilet, and when I came back, my mate said, "Iggy Pop's just named your song as Song of the Decade." So I didn't know. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that happens every day. So I stopped breathing for about 18 minutes. I just sat there, you know, with a coffee getting gradually colder. Just taking that in, just trying to sort of just absorb that fucking statement. And after that, yeah.
That's crazy, man. Because like, obviously, Iggy Pop, he obviously is a DJ now, so he supports lots of bands, but... Song of the decade from a legend like that is next level, man.
Yes, well, that's freakish. I mean, it's like going from 0 to 90, never mind 0 to 60. And I'm a fragile fella. So just hearing that, I mean, a good job. You know, if I'd have heard that when I was about 20, I probably would have gone off and had an overdose on something. But now that I'm 60, sort of 69, and I've got three kids, I'm more settled. But it was still a shock.
I can't believe. I have just seen that in the podcast as well. I can't believe that you don't look your age at all, man. You don't know at all, and it's great to see you still out there touring, and that you've still got another 5 dates left. Where else can people catch you?
No, we've got 11 dates left.
11 dates. Sorry. Well, yeah,
we've only got about 12 dates. I love brown paper bags.
No, what I'll do, I'll get the tour dates up while we're playing a song. We'll play a wee song in a little bit, and I'll get the tour dates up.
Good man, yeah.
Have a wee look at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the things I was noticing when I was watching your live footage is how impressed I am with the bits where you do sort of spoken word, almost like comedic rants or the intros. And I just find it quite interesting because it's hard to tell how much is ad-libbed. I don't know if you're freestyling any of it or it's all memorized. And both are just as impressive because I think I've only got one song where I don't rhyme. And it's quite, I find it really hard to memorize stuff like that. So have you got any tricks that you do, or is it, are you just doing things off the top of your head, or?
Ever since I was a little boy, I'm the eldest of seven. And when I was a little boy, I used to make up stories for my brothers and sisters in bed at night. So I'd be lying in bed and they'd all say, "Tell us a story, Michael." And then I'd start telling them, I'd just make a story about a cowboy or about this prince who had a sword and a nice van with a load of hay in the back. And it'd be going out into the wild, well, snowy weather. And all of us would be in the back of the van in the straw, keeping warm. And he'd go off and he'd have adventures. So I'd be telling these stories. So I'm just naturally a storyteller, and I can find, it's a skill, but I know my strengths, and my strength is that I can think on the spot when I'm in a corner. I nearly got beaten up by a load of traveling guys who were, I used to go out drawing people on brown paper bags. I did that for about 30 years, portraits, and I was in this pub. And these people commissioned me to do a lot of drawings. So I did quite a lot and I was really tired. And it got to like 11 o'clock and the landlord says, "Come on, it's time to sling your hook." So they said, "Oh, we'll pay you outside." So I got outside and they said, "Just come round here." And I went round the back with them. And then the next thing, somebody pushed me in the back and I fell on my face. And I just said, "Don't ruin me trousers. I'm going to a wedding in the morning." And that's basically saved my life because they didn't kick the shit out of me. But they did reach into my pocket and found a tenner, and I had to walk all the way home back to be flat in Harrells. But I could always think on my feet. I love it. I love the fact that I can stand there and something comes, something arrives, you know, like the word petal. I've got, you know, there's petal. You can have a petal. What would you do with a petal? Well, you'd just look at it. It's only a petal, and it's not important, and it isn't a bomb. It's just a little petal, and it's pretty. So put it in water or put it in a little album. Just bollocks.
Is there something in the water of Yorkshire? Because obviously that's, Captain Hotknives is the same, isn't he? He just...
Yeah, Chris is a very intriguing and... He has a lot of, there's a lot under the surface, and he's a very loose cannon.
Yeah.
He's a wild man, but he's also, he's magical. He has, you know, you've got people like Beefheart, and you've got people like, Ivor Cutler and people like that. And that's the area that he's got stories about his gran and about sort of the second floor of the flats and stuff, and the dodgy things under the bed, and Johnny Depp going off with his bird and stuff, and the pigeons trying to hypnotize him and stuff. The pigeon made me shoplift. The pigeons made me shoplift. So he's a dude. He's playing with us. We're playing in Sheffield at a place called the Dorothy Pax in December. Is it December? Oh, yeah. Sheffield, 7th of December, Dorothy Pax. And he's on with us. And we saw him last time. He came on and he did like a support slot. And there he is doing his mad and wonderful kind of freeform stuff. And then he did, I'm not sure what the thing was, but he basically stopped time. Because what he did this amazingly, really powerful, very grim, hard sort of tale. And it was beautiful. So yeah, he's a man to watch out for, and special.
Absolutely, Captain Hotknives. Hopefully, we'll get back to Glasgow soon. Where have you got any plans for Glasgow yet yourself?
No, there's nothing. We've got nothing in Glasgow. I mean, we'd go down a bomb in Glasgow. It's just we're playing in the north. We're in Newcastle next week, and then we're sort of. We tend to sort of play in some really odd places. Like we're in a theatre one minute, then the next thing we're playing a bloody an art centre. Next thing we're playing a greasy little rock club, and sometimes you know we do like a children's school or something. And it's cause mayhem in a school and just watch children dribble. It's lovely to see a young child dribble and eyes agog.
We've got to see if any of our viewers make their eyes agog by playing the new single, Bingley. Just for people that may not be aware of your music. So let's just introduce them to some of the tunes. Would you like to tell us a little bit about Bingley, the inspiration behind it? Give a little introduction.
Yeah. Well, Bingley is a blues, but it's just a blues about pedalling your bike and going to this small little Yorkshire town. It's a bit, basically, it's about me visiting my old friend who's older than me, so kind of 70 plus, and I'm going to see him, and I'm going to cycle along the canal, and it's not like John Lee Hooker. It's like it's Yorkshire, so it's quite low key. I drink tea. I'm not doing any mainlining or anything. I'm just cycling to meet my friend. We're going to discuss books, films, and he'll probably be wearing some loafers, sitting in the pub, and we're in this quiet little old man's pub. We'll sit in the corner. So it's just about me visiting my friend before he dies, you know, because we're both going to die. And he asked me, he said, about 2 or 3 years ago, he said, let's do a book before we die. So we did. So we've done a book called It's Irrelevant. And this song's about, the song Bingley is about me going to visit my friend Robert Galletta in Bingley.
Gonna Bingley, gonna Bingley on my bike. Gonna see my friend, gonna cycle all the way. Gonna take a little while, it's a windy day. Gonna Bingley, been a little while since I've been on my bike. I've been tired when I get there, and I'm gonna have to cycle back. Said I'll be there for 12. Looks like I'm gonna be late. I heard a disturbing call. Could have been a cow, could have been a horse. I could have been dreaming, it freaked me. I got 30 mile or more to go today. Better start pedaling. I've been feeling a little low lately. Starting to pick up. I've been to Armley, to Bramley, to Putsey, to Shipley, to Keighley, and there's only one place I wanna be, Bingley. Gonna talk to my friend. He'll have a pint, I'll have a cup of tea. We'll set the world to right. I used to go to Bingley when I was a little boy. Used to visit me Auntie Kathleen. She had lovely food, a fridge, chocolate biscuits, coffee, camp coffee, hot milk and sugar. Me and my mum and my brothers and my sister, we used to just tuck in. I've been to Armley, to Bramley, to Putsey, to Shipley, to Keighley, and there's only one place I want to be. Bingley. Gonna sit in the corner of the pub. Keep away from the locals. Mind their own fucking business. I'm going to Bingley. I'm gonna chat to my friend. Talk about the future. Talk about dying too. So many wonderful memories. I love her friend. I'm gonna relax and have a cup of tea in Bingley. Relax and sit at the back of the pub in Bingley. Relax and rest my weary legs in Bingley.
Brilliant stuff. Taken from the new album Pop Out Now. That was Bingley by Mick Artistic. And I was just like, by the way, apologies for my original poster said the ego death instead of the ego trip. That was because I'd actually been talking about I had an in-depth conversations about mushrooms and ego death that same night, so that's why I got that one mixed up. But Cracking Tune, man, what is the process of writing your songs? Are you going out there with intentionally to write these songs? Are you want to capture certain emotions and stories, or is it just whatever it comes to you?
Well, it varies. It's just a minute. Sometimes it starts off with a couple of words like Rastafarian wiring, and or somebody says Quentin Tarantino in a Barnsley accent, and I'll just stick it in a little book, and then it'll sit there for about a year. And then one day I'll go back and I'll look at the I'll go, Jesus, Quentin Tarantino. He doesn't read the Beano. He's hip and cool and meano. Right, Cortino. So they just kind of sit there like these little seeds, like little mushrooms in the dark. And I leave them for about, and then I come back and look at the two words like Rastafari and wiring, yellow, green and red. They're all pretty colours, but if you mix them up, you're dead. I had a friend with a spanner. He came round the other night. He told me he could fix my emerging heater, and now he's shining bright. Oh, Rastafari and wiring. Hello. So it's I like the marriage of ordinary words and music. Something has to clash. So like a Bingley, it's a blues. And blues is kind of associated with like kind of troubles and hardship and people have got fucking addictions to various substances. But Bingley's just about me riding my bike and it's fairly inoffensive, and it's an inoffensive blues. So I like to kind of mess with the genres because I just make mischief.
Stacey says it's a great tune. It's making me miss Chris and Shipley. Wait, and I'm assuming Shipley's near Bingley. I'm not too.
Yes, it is. Yes, close.
Yeah. Jigsaw Tiger says, "Love a good story and a song, bro." Mark McInnes saying, "Loving that wee tune." And sounds like Bingley is the governor of somewhere. I don't know. I've never been to Bingley.
It's just a govern.
Govan's like was originally at one point. Govan was bigger than Glasgow. It's in Glasgow, but it was bigger. That's where all the Clyde, the ships were. Then after the shipbuilding trade, you know, I used to live in Govan. It's got a lot of problems with poverty, but it's recently they built a bridge from the posh bit to over there. So there's a lot of chat just now about gentrification. Great young rapper called Jam Harvey just did a song yesterday that came out called Money Talks in the Govan Docks. So it's having that. It's an interesting conversation because obviously you want to see things improve for an area. Then also it feels like it's not the community's interests at heart.
Yeah. You can throw the baby out with the bathwater sometimes. I mean, I live in a place in West Leeds, it's Armley, and Armley is fairly poor, but, and it's had a really bad reputation for years and years. And I've been here 22 years. It's got a lot of people who don't have money and people who come out. There's Armley Jail here. People come out of the jail and they come straight back onto the streets and there's nothing here. There's no money and stuff. So they end up back inside in about sort of a few weeks because they're kind of stealing from the shops, or, you know, they're nothing's changed. They're still in that spiral. But at the same time, Armley has a lot of characters and character and beauty. And it makes me laugh, and it scares me a little. But
I watched a few of your Glastonbury performances, and I was reading in the comments that, is it true you played every day at Glastonbury for like 10 years or like some big, quite, it seemed like quite a big, a lot of performances?
I'd never done a festival before. I'd never played one, and we sent a CD to Glastonbury, our very first one, I think, was called Listen. And the CD did like a little tour of all the tents for about 3 or 4 months, and nobody kind of picked up on it. And they thought, I don't, is it funny? Is it quirky? Is it rock and roll? Is it punk? Whatever. And nobody was going to grab it. And then it did about three circuits and it finally settled at this little place called the Avalon Cafe Stage. And people took a little shine to it and they said, oh, we like him. Well, no, he's the one who does that song about turning into the dad or whatever. And so we got a foot in the door. And I'm just used to working. I'm used to being an artist, a working artist. So I had like 20, 30 years wandering around drawing people. And I had to kind of hustle in some rough pubs. And so you just have to have a kind of a work ethic. So we got to Glastonbury, we did 25 gigs over 4 days. So we're doing about five gigs a day.
How did your voice hold up with that?
It didn't.
No.
I was doing
Did you smoke? Did you smoke at times?
I was doing Modern Dance by Sunday afternoon. Now, I didn't have any sort of like vocal. I didn't understand how to use my voice. So I just came from like a kind of a shouty, talky. I did stand up for about 10 years before I became a musician. So it's all about chat and all about thinking on your feet. And so I'd never kind of mastered the discipline of like singing and doing. So after about maybe six gigs, my voice would be there.
I'm turning into.
So, but Johnny, the guitarist, bullied me into taking some lessons and using my diaphragm. And I've never been the same since.
I can relate deeply to that. It was a running joke. I would lose my voice at every festival until it turned out it was so bad one time that I was like, you know, it was a kind of running joke. Oh, you must have had a good night last night kind of thing. And then it was like one time I was running a stage. And I hadn't done anything. I had two beers and maybe one joint or something. And then I woke up the next day and everyone was like, oh, you must have had a good night last night. And I was like, there's something wrong with me. So it was actually a vocal polyp. And they said it could be caused by smoking, shouting, talking too loud, singing without doing vocal warm-ups. Basically all the things that I do. But there's a sixth one and it could just be genetic, which the missus didn't let me away with. But I had one singing lesson after that. And Sev Cash, out, Sev. And it blew me away how wrong I was using my voice, how I didn't breathe properly. I went to a speech therapist for a couple of lessons. I still haven't figured that out. And yeah, just putting your voice under that kind of pressure. So the idea of doing 25 gigs, man, I think three a weekend is probably my limit, I would guess.
Yeah, no, people were saying, oh, he's the hardest working man in showbiz. Oh, that's a terrible accolade. You know, I'd rather be the most interesting and, you know, kind of multi-gendered fucking artist or something rather than some fucking sweater. And
I've been called that as well. Is that actually an insult? No, that I think about.
No, it's just a bit. It's not very exciting to be the hardest working.
Ah, it's like being a football player being called the workhorse or something.
Oh, he's a good lad. I don't want to be a good lad.
Fear puts a shift in. He puts a shift in, that boy. Aye, but yeah. So Glastonbury. You just continue to go to that. So these days you play once a night, every night.
No, we just do weekends, and I mean the last weekend I was.
Sorry, showing... I meant Glastonbury. Sorry, I maybe missed. Maybe the.
Oh, sorry. Glastonbury. Yeah, we've sort of. I was doing about the last time I played, which was the year before. We did about five gigs, I think, over so maybe like a gig a day, a gig and a half a day. Yeah.
And what do you? How do you feel? Because obviously, I've been in situations whereby when I've played a gig and then went on, like maybe at the Edinburgh Fringe, for example, once we played a gig like 2 hours later, and it was quite interesting because it felt like you're cheating a bit because you're coming out with similar patter, almost identical set list. Do you when you're doing like that many gigs in a weekend at Glastonbury or somewhere like that, do you peak? Do you think you get better as the weekend goes on, or do you peak in the middle? What do you think?
Well, I think my strength is that I can improvise and that I can make stuff happen. So I have 15 albums of stuff, but often you know we've gone on stage And we've done one song and it's lasted like the first set because I've just gone off on one. And I've just decided to talk about, you know, kind of like, you know, hedgerows or thickets or the wonderful world of thickets, you know, something. And that can go on for 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So I my strength is that I turn up on stage like a new baby. I'm going, oh, I'm looking around and the world is a wonderful and magical place. And I'm going, oh, and I'm pointing and going, look, there's a plane. And the plane is going to, it's just coming over the trees there and it's just dropping petals. Petals, it's dropping petals on it. No, they're not petals. They're tiny little bombs, little current bombs. So it's just solid. Yeah, sorry.
Do you think that the more you're doing over the weekend, do you think your confidence increases? Or are you just always on the same, you're on the...
I'm just working. And I mean, I just tend to sort of, my work is just, is thinking on my feet, making, you know, just bringing ideas, just chucking ideas out all the time. Bang, bang, you know, scattergun. Sometimes we're doing this, some of the same set maybe twice a day or something, but it won't be the same set because I'll be riffing on somebody in the audience who's got a very loud mother and I'll be playing with the mother or flirting with her. And so it's whatever's in front of me. I'm not really interested in kind of delivering the set or the, you know, because I just want to fuck about. I want to be there and I want to make people think, well, I could do that.
Yeah.
What's he doing? Is this a sound check? What's he doing? How come he's not doing a proper song, you know? And I love it. I love the fact that I'm up there and I'm just basically, I'm given license to just mess.
There's loads of funny bits in your back catalogue, but there's just some actually beautiful moments as well, you know, and then obviously sometimes you kind of, you're managing both those things. Like, is it Two Old Men that's on the album?
Old Guy.
And that's great. That's really funny, but really poignant as well. And then you've got songs like Stars, which are just beautiful as well. Yeah. And it's just, that's why I was saying, like, it's hard to pigeonhole stuff like that. Because, I mean, we've got a bit of comedy in our music as well. And I feel like sometimes people don't understand that, you know, I've had band members that didn't understand it as well. Don't do that. People won't take you seriously if you do that. And I think that can be true to a certain extent. But I was always inspired by bands like Super Furry Animals or the Beta Band or whatever. They're going to have songs that are going to be spine tingling and, you know, make you feel something emotional, but you're also going to have a bit of fun. I suppose the way I like looking at it is I like to take the craft of writing seriously, but I don't want to take myself too seriously. Was that how you would kind of describe what it is you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fairly genial fella. I get up there and I just want to kind of please. I mean, the party, you know, kind of animal or something. Well, not, but I like to basically just look after the crowd and entertain them. But at the same time, some of the stuff that we do is quite difficult material, and it's quite. There's a song called "Bullying Son," just about. I'm living with a bullying son, and the house is too small for his massive frame. And I'm going to take my wife and the CDs and just leave my bullying son to the house. You know, so it's there is some dark, and some of the songs are about sadness and about depression, because I have bouts of depression at times and stuff, but also I can be a little boy. And I'm not trying to be anything. I'm not trying to be funny, or I'm not trying to be. I'm just hypnotized, charmed by stuff around me.
You mentioned the book earlier on just before we played the last song. What is that? Can you tell us a bit more about that? And is it available? And you said you wrote it with your friend.
Oh yeah. The book is called "It's Irrelevant," and it looks like a little schoolboy's Sylvine exercise book, and it's And basically, the story of what happened was back just before lockdown, me and my friend Robert, we'd been sort of, we'd gone out dancing together for years. We liked punk. We were into kind of different bands, and we'd always be turning each other onto different things we'd heard or seen. And Robert was like fairly well educated. He's been to Oxford and done the classics. And I was from a poorer background, but we seemed to have a really nice marriage of ideas. And there was a certain, we clicked, but Robert said to me, we'd never done anything together as artists. He writes poetry and I do my writing and this, that, and the other. And it got to like, he said, well, why don't we just do a book before we die? And I thought, yeah, let's do a book about all the phone calls we have. Because we're on the phone and we're talking, we say, oh God, I heard this great band last night, The Whole Steady. Or I saw this great film called Tony Erdman. And so he said, let's do a book about these people that we talk about. So it's a book full of like, and it's got like little a brief description of why these people mean so much to us. And so it's just a book about written by two old guys about some fairly obscure artists that it's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to change the world. And so we thought it's irrelevant. And it's available from mickartistic.com from the website.
Yeah, I've got it up here. I'll put the link in the comments for anyone who's interested.
Yeah. It's full of pen and ink drawings that I've done and some writing, and Robert's done most of the writing. So,
I'll put a link in the comments for anyone who's wanting to maybe check that out. I'm very interested in that. I also love the idea of, that's the kind of thing that friends say to each other, we should do a book before we die, and they don't do it. So I get the impression that you're somebody that gets things done.
Yeah, well, because for a long time I didn't. For a long time I was a bit too kind of perfectionist and saying, oh, well, no, I can't really. I'd always put an obstacle in front of an idea and say, oh, that's a great idea. Oh, no, I can't do it because I haven't grown a beard. So I can't be in this. I can't make a film about Robinson Crusoe. You know, so I'd always sabotage any. But as I got older, I realized that I'm getting older and that there's all these young books there. They're following their ideas up and just doing them. And Johnny Guitar said, what's the worst? Just stick it out. Just bloody do it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's not totally formed. Just get the bloody thing out. It doesn't matter if you don't, because if nobody sees it, then it doesn't matter. But just get it out and it'll grow legs or wings or whatever.
Yes, it's quite heartbreaking when you see people who are very talented to just, they're sitting with a hard drive full of amazing music that they just aren't ready to share with the world. And obviously it's their decision, but you know, sometimes you're just like, get a grip, come on, this is actually brilliant. But
yeah,
sometimes most of the time people are their harshest own critics. And sadly, the people that aren't harsh enough in themselves seem to have no problem with releasing subpar music as well. Yeah.
So that's the annoying thing is, well, we need to get rid of them bastards. the mediocre, you know what I mean?
So what's the message? What could you send? So if like, any of my friends, they probably know who they are if they're listening and they're sitting on their good tunes, what's your message to them?
Well, just be brave. Be brave and just say to yourself, I can do hard things. And that's it, really.
You know, what's your message to the shite people that they have too much confidence?
I forgive you.
I've got a wee video of your paintings. Realize you can't talk because it automatically mutes you when I play the video. But tell us about that exhibition.
Well, that exhibition, I started painting about, I've always drawn, I've always done stuff, I've always been a greedy bastard. So I've always wanted to do everything, you know, to play, write, scribble, direct, do the lighting, wash the dishes. And so the beginning of this year, I, or just towards the end of last year, I was in a bit of a low spot And a friend of mine says, why don't you do some painting? And that's what I'd kind of gone to throughout my life. I've kind of gone to paint. But I'd, the last exhibition I'd had had been, I'd only sold a picture. So I felt kind of diminished. I felt very small. I thought, I'm not going to put myself up to be knocked down again. But then my brother said, just keep painting. You just paint. You're a painter. Doesn't matter whether you don't sell for millions. What you do is beautiful. So I got myself a, somebody commissioned me to do a, he brought a kitchen cupboard door to a gig, and he said, will you put something on this kitchen cupboard door for me? And I can put it in my shed, and I'm going to get all my musical mates that I love, and I'm going to give them a kitchen door and say, a kitchen cupboard door, and say, will you put something on this and just decorate my shed, my man's shed, with these kitchens. So I took this door, and I got my acrylics out, and I painted a fat little rock singer, because I do a song called Fat Little Rock Singer about this guy who dresses in black, but like his shirts, his buttons are flying off his shirt, and his belly's hanging out. And but he's still loved by his fans because his music's so beautiful. And so I painted this little rock. And then the next thing, I started to do some more paintings. And these are all, the pictures are from inside. Normally, I've spent my life depicting people, doing portraits of people that you can recognize. But the people that came from this, in this show, these people turned up out of my soul, basically. I'd be looking at the canvas and I'm going, come on, come to me. And I start making marks, and then somebody would appear out of the mist. Somebody would appear out of the mess. And sometimes it'd be an imposter. So I'd just mess it. I'd just cover it over. And then I'd work again until somebody else would reappear. And then I'm thinking, I know you. You're all right. And it might be some kind of wood nymph or it could be some kind of, like a cannibal hamster or something. So I did about 14 of these paintings, and they're all from in here, and they were all frightening to do. They all hurt.
Some of them are terrifying.
Yeah. But the gallery that I showed him in is a place called the Pull Bank Vintage Interiors. And the chap who owns it, his brother's a painter and he makes art. And he had this wonderful little medicine cabinet that he'd made. And all the products were called
Fuck It All.
And this is a syringe. This is a syringe. But it's not actually a syringe. It's a... Hang on. I can open it up. It's a ballpoint pen.
That's magic.
And it's so the thing is, all that stuff there makes me laugh. And I'm so happy that I'm in the world, because there's always something that's going to just upset me and make me laugh. And I always look for that every day. I look for something that's going to appeal to me.
So this is when you're doing your art exhibition.
Yeah.
And you've got that syringe that says fuck it all. So was that just sitting on its own, like next to the art, on like a...
No, it was in a little cabinet, and the cabinet was called, and it had all these like, fuck it all tablets, fuck it all syringe, fuck it all lint, dressings. And I just thought it was sublime. And that's the stuff that I think we need. We need kind of stuff like that to kind of just lift us out of the mire that we're in, you know, at the moment.
I found it really interesting what you were saying about when you're painting the heads. And you're saying that when you don't recognise them, so when you're saying it's quite scary as well. So when you're seeing one of these scary faces, but you recognise it, are you feeling do you feel a kinship with this?
Yeah, I see that. I see myself in there. Yeah. I see a kind of a sort of like something through sort of like the briars or the brambles. There's life in there somewhere, and I think, oh yeah, I recognise that. But it's like it's just covered in scars and scabs and stuff. But at the same time, it's reassuring, because it's somebody who's been kicked around a bit, but there's still a little twinkle or there's still a light there. And sometimes there isn't, but at the same time, even when they're suffering, there's still something I recognize. I mean, and the little bell goes in my head. I think, oh yeah, that's right now. That painting works. I recognise him. Welcome.
Do you have any? Do you just totally destroy the paintings, or do you keep any of the ones that you don't recognise?
I'm a bit of a coward in the way of getting rid of stuff. I normally paint over stuff, and sometimes you just have to. No, I'm not a coward. No. I can really go to town on a canvas, and I can start something, and it looks kind of, oh yeah, it's quite nice. There. It's got some kind of groovy kind of lines there, and some nice colours stuff. There. And I think, what it needs now is a good splash of black right across the front. Get the fucking black in and destroy it. And so there's a voice of reason, and there's a voice of unreason. And I normally listen to the voice of unreason because usually something brilliant and beautiful comes when you just let go and stop trying to be cool and just, go. Just go. In you go.
Mark's asking where he can buy your paintings. I'm assuming the website.
They're not on the website, no. But you can get in touch with... you can send me an email. I can send you some images, Mark. Just contact me on my email address. That's it, Mick. It's mick@mickartistic.com.
So it'll be on the website, won't it?
Yeah, it'll be on the website, yeah.
Yeah, I'll link.
Or you can contact me on Facebook or on Twitter, and I'll show you some of the work. I've sold 4 already, so I'm really buzzing. I'm very, very proud of myself.
That's fantastic. And you've still got another, for anyone who's going to be in the Yorkshire area, it's... just recap where it is.
It's a place called Poolbank Vintage Interiors, and it's near Otley, and the show is on till December the 16th. It's Friday to Monday every week till December the 16th, 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock, and the details will be on, if you Google Poolbank Vintage Interiors, and it's Otley. LS21 1FD, oblique.
That's fine. APMU says, "I forgive you, classic." That was a good answer. That was a good answer. Stuart's also enjoying your paintings. He's saying those are impressive. Just love, says Stuart. I think we're going to play Plastic Fox. Could you tell us a little bit, Plastic Fox?
I was just coming back from my holidays. I'd gone down to this place called Branscombe, and I'm sitting in the back of the car with my partner and my two mates. I mean, my friend in front there, Linda, she said, I went to a garden centre last week and I saw this Plastic Fox. And the word, it basically, my head exploded and I just got my pen out and I started to write. I just loved the marriage of plastic and fox. The two words just... connected, like it was like kind of Semtex or something. They just and I started to scribble and I wrote the song in about Plastic Fox at the top of the garden, Plastic Fox curled up like a child, pride of place next to the water feature, Plastic Fox, it's got a snail on its head, and it all just tumbled out. And then I got home and we worked on it, and it became this raging tirade. And but Iggy Pop calls it a classic. A surefire, something like that. Anyway, he really likes it. But lots of people like it. Gideon Coe's a big fan. He stuck it on the radio and he just said, that's kind of an anthem, really. People say, I'll play Plastic Fox, Mick. Little kids do versions as well on there. Little 3 or 4 year old children do versions on online. And it's normally much better than mine.
Plastic Fox.
Plastic fox at the top of the garden, plastic fox curled up like a child, pride of place next to the water feature, plastic fox, it's got a snail on its head. Plastic fox. Plastic feet and a plastic tail, out in all weathers, wind or hail,
lying in the garden covered in snow. There's a bit bitten off of its plastic toe. Plastic fox! Butterflies flutter out in the garden, washing line empty except for some pegs. The lady of the house, she's doing some lunch, two slices of toast and some scrambled eggs. Plastic fox! Plastic fox, it came out of a box. Plastic fox, it was a present from her son. Plastic fox, it went straight in the garden. Plastic fox, the grandkids love it. Plastic fox. Gnomes with fishing rods scattered in the garden. A little white windmill down by the trees. But the plastic fox is the centre of attention. Plastic fox with its plastic knees. Plastic fox! Plastic fox! Oh! 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 Oh!
Fantastic. Plastic Fox. Brilliant stuff. I'm going to play Sweet Leaf of the North to close us out. I did say at the start it's too long to put in a podcast, but if you put it at the end, you know, if you listened this far, you're going to love that as a classic.
As a salve to after Plastic Fox.
Yes, Stuart, Matt. Planning box with Tigers, still all enjoying the plastic foxness. Is there anything else happening in Yorkshire music wise, or even not Yorkshire, just maybe something that's maybe on the cusp of the on the underground that maybe I might not be aware of that you recommend that I should check out?
I recommend some good films.
Yeah,
we just had the Leeds Film Festival in Leeds, and I went to see a film with my partner called Sex, and it was a Norwegian comedy, and it was about two chimney sweeps, and they were sitting in the canteen one morning, and one of them says to the other, he said, I had a really weird dream last night, and I dreamt that David Bowie was looking at me, and he was looking at me with really kind eyes, and he was just looking really warm, and I felt like a woman. And it could have been David Barrett, it could have been God. And then his mate says, that's mad, he says, because last night I had sex with a man. And he said, this fella, he was just, we were chatting and he was, you know, just looking at me, but he seemed to be really attracted to me. And then he asked me if I'd like to have sex with him. And I said, yeah. I said, yes. And it was, and he says, but you're not gay. He said, no. And his friend said, did you tell your wife? He said, yeah, I went home, I just told her straight, because it's only sex, I mean, but it was just, I'd never done it before, and it just, so that's, and the film carried on in that vein. So and another film called Bird, that's got a fella called Barry Keoghan in, who was in The Banshees of Inisherin, the film with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. A film called Bird, and it's just about a bad dad and his daughter, there's a strange man who's a bird in it, and it's just come out.
I've noticed that you've picked one-word films as well.
Yeah.
You're not watching it unless it's
got... I'm a man of few words, I am, Mark.
As soon as a film's got more than one word, you're like, nah, I can't be bothered with that, but give me an impactful one-word album any day of the week. I've got your tour dates, I've managed to find them, here we go. So we are, Edinburgh has been, so you've got Newcastle, Kendal, Sheffield, Birmingham, Hebden, London, Manchester, Nottingham, Glossop and Leeds all before the end of the year, man. So it's still loads of gigs to come up. And hopefully we'll get you up to Glasgow next year and maybe a couple of Scottish festivals as well.
Right.
You're doing well for... I can't quite confirm it yet, but I think we will be doing a wee festival in the Isle of Arran in June. We just need to get permission confirmed from the owner of the site. But we did it last year, and this year it was great fun. So yeah, I think our crowd would love you, man. So let's try and make a Glasgow gig or a festival happen going forward. And the album Pop is out now, and I'm assuming that you've got it on your website or Bandcamp as well. Yeah,
it's on the website. You can get it on Bandcamp. You can buy it if there's only about 30 copies left actually, I think. So you better hurry up, buy one.
That's great. And the best way to support, I'm just reminding people, because it's surprising sometimes people don't realise that the best way to support is probably buying the physical directly from the artist, but then also streaming it. Because a good friend of mine was saying that, oh, I'm sorry, I always stream it on Spotify, and it's like, but you've already bought it. You bought it physically first, so it's fine. It actually works. So it helps the artist if you buy the physical thing and then stream it.
And if you come out to the gigs as well, that works. Come and see us, you know, like and if the weather's bad, just keep coming. We'll look after you.
Thank you very much, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to end with the Sweet Leaf of the North, the Iggy Pop song of the decade, and yeah, it's like a film, really, isn't it? It's a short film. If you just go ahead and give us a wee introduction to that, and I'll just line that up for the people.
Yeah, Sweet Leaf of the North is just, I wrote it about 15 years ago, and it was, we'd been playing around Leeds, playing small gigs, and then we got invited to play in London, and we were so excited, and we packed the car, and we headed off, and we're making our way towards the motorway, and there's a little leaf trap behind the windscreen wiper. And it just stayed on, and we were trying to knock it. Well, we tried to increase speed, but it still stayed on, and it stayed with us right the way down past Leicester and down past Barnsley, all the way to London, and it came back with us. And so it was on our first visit to London outside of Leeds, and it was a kind of a magical sort of talisman. So, and I decided to write a song about it.
And what a song it is as well.
Thank you
very much, mate. Absolute pleasure. Good luck with the rest of your tour.
And thank you, Mark.
Hopefully see you next year, man.
Lovely. All right, God bless. Take care, yeah.
Oh, this song is all about a little leaf. Oh, this is, yeah. Now get your fucking pints in the air now. Just hold your pints in the air like you're with me. You're not with me, you're somewhere else, aren't you? You're at Christmas, Nirvana heaven. Anyway, here we are. We're all together here, and this is a song about a little leaf that got trapped behind the windscreen wiper when we went to do a gig in London. We went to do a gig in London, and we were like excited and enchanted about travelling down there to places where people had sex all the time, and they had money coming out of their pockets, just loads of money, and they talked, they said, oh, I don't believe you, I've got a fucking shotgun, and there's just stuff like that, and you think, my God. And they all had money and shotguns, and they all ate kebabs. And I wanted to smell that. I wanted to smell the smell of cordite and fucking oil and kebabs and tarmac. I wanted to listen to that accent, and I wanted to see a film star, an old film star walking along that were really small, like John Mills. John Mills is only 3'7". He's very, very small. He's like a little doll. I saw him at a fucking zebra crossing, like in a pinstripe suit. He was a little doll. I thought, you're massive. You're a big star, but he was a little man. And it was fucking magic. He was a fucking pixie. So all these film stars are all pixies. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's 4'9". Anyway, this song's all about a little leaf that got trapped behind the... We did this gig. We went down to London to play this gig, and we were dead excited about playing in London, and we drove through the wind and the rain, and it was very warm for December. And then we roared down, and we got past Sheffield, and we're down towards Leicester, and the little leaf was still with us. And we got all the way down to London, and And we got into London and I was so happy. I cried with joy, but I didn't cry. I cried inwardly. I didn't want to show my tears to my bandmates. I just cried inwardly. I was melting like a little fucking knickerbocker glory. And I, there I was, I thought, here I am finally. Chelsea, Earl's Court. This is it, the kingdom. The enchanted kingdom where I'll be famous and people will look up to me and like you're looking up to me now. And I've got used to it now, but back then I wasn't used to being looked up to and adored and worshipped, you know. Back then I was just another Joe on the street. I was just another guy there, just making his way through life. And now it's a different story. I'm kind of strangely distant and I'm apart. And I appreciate what you're doing out there and I feel for you. You've got your fucking Christmas presents to wrap yet. And I don't buy Christmas presents, just people give me presents and I just say thank you. And I sign it and then I just fucking give it back. If it's shit, it's normally shit. I don't want to tell you, I don't want to fucking bore you, but anyway, when I was young and naive and I was 56, and life was a fucking cherry and I wanted to smell that cherry and grasp it, and we did the gig in London and we were like, you know, it was so exciting and I could, I looked over and I could see somebody from a famous, an artist, I thought, oh my God, it's Jeremy Deller, oh my God, it's fucking, it's Damien Hirst, oh my God, oh shit, he's watching me, oh, I don't know what to do, I better just do this. Oh, I'm very shy. And I went, I was just melting in the joy of London. And then I did it, I did the gig and we got paid £460. We sold a load of CDs that night and we got back on the motorway and we're driving up the motorway and then we stopped for some petrol at the cinema. It was like £185 for petrol and it was like, then there was fucking magazines and I got some crisps and a fucking big bag. One of those big fucking big bags, you know, the £1.95, and Ben got some and Johnny as well, so, and we came back with 43 quid each. It was fucking, and I felt strangely thwarted. But anyway, I thought, no, the Little Leaf was still with us on the journey. It came all the way, it was there, it just stayed like a kind of impassive thing. It showed nothing, so it didn't do anything, it just stayed. It was still. It was a little piece of living matter that wasn't living anymore and it didn't fucking matter, but it was still there on the windscreen and it was like just going, Mick, it's all right. Look what's happening. Just calm down. You're anxious. You're going to get depressed and you don't want to get fucking depressed at Christmas because that just spoils it for everybody. Just put me out. So I wrote this song anyway. This is a song and I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do this for a minute. I'm gonna do this. I'm just gonna do this. For a minute, that's what Kanye West does. He just does fucking 20 minutes. I'm gonna do this. And everybody goes, that's fucking amazing. That's just genius. He's not even speaking words. All he's just going, I'm gonna do this. Anyway, I'm gonna do this now. I'm gonna write the fucking song that I wrote. Anyway, just write this. Bloody, I don't fucking know. It goes like this. I think it goes like this anyway. Go back and forth. Clap out of time if you want.
a symbol of hope. In a world that's cold and gray, now there'll come a time when you take a tumble and leave us and fall to the tarmac below. You give us hope, 'cause you're a survivor. You'll always be with us wherever we go. Come on, sweet leaf of the north, you go back and forth. A little brown star to guide us on our way, sweet leaf of the north. You go back and forth, a symbol of hope in a world that's cold and gray.
Fingered organ, four letters.
Cock.
I think the little leaf heard that as well.